If you've been with us during this month, you know we've taken moments each service to pay respect and to learn from Black History Month and to take the time to do several different things each service. Last week, Lisa spoke and shared some incredibly interesting information and some pivotal women in history in the Adventist Church, Black women who played a pivotal role in the health mission and doing so many incredible things that I definitely had no clue about. So that was a very interesting highlight that we have to do last week. This week we're taking time to talk to someone from our area right here in Chattanooga who can share some things with us. This is Yusef Hakim. Got several things to ask you and to talk about in a 20-minute time period. Okay. So we'll try to be concise. First off, your name. Tell us about your name.
Okay. Firstly, if you would please, let me express appreciation to Pastor
Mike. Call him Pastor sometimes.
Gilbert. And you, the congregation, for allowing me the opportunity to come out and be with you. And really what this does, it's a learning environment for me also. Sometimes things come out you didn't realize was in there, but you have to let it flow. And I also want to thank a couple of members of the congregation, the Dillers, a couple of revolutionaries in the Glenwood neighborhood. No, really, they're fantastic.
Don't clap for yourself. Tommy was clapping for himself right there. You be humble. You just nod and, oh, thank you.
But they're great friends and neighbors and community activists, and we love them being in our community. Going back to what you just asked me, my name, Yusef Abdul Hakim. Yusef is the given name my mother gave me, which is the Arabic pronunciation for Joseph, which means may God add or increase her. Abdul means servant of God, and Hakim means wise one, which I hope to be one day.
It's a powerful name. There's a lot going on. Yeah.
Okay.
My name just means weird. Long, strange name. So that's...
Yeah. And I came about this name in 1976. I became a part of what is commonly referred to as the Nation of Islam in 1973. And I was in the Muslim community for about 34 years. And I guess one of the first questions people might want to ask is why did you leave the Christian community and go to the Islamic community? It was, as I reflect on it, it was one of those kinds of things where I did not see people of color being recognized as human beings. And the Nation of Islam afforded me an opportunity to see myself as something greater than a second-class citizen. What I mean by that, one of the things that we were taught in the Nation of Islam, that you're the Asiatic black man, the maker, the owner, the cream of the planet Earth. Somebody tells you something like that, you think you're a big dog, okay? And, but, you know, so over the years, I went to the mainstream part of the Islamic community, but that was growth and development. I never lost my relationship with people in the Christian community, and I think that benefited me very well.
Yeah. And that's a very unique spiritual journey as you've kind of gone through that. So this is not to say, oh, you used to do that, but now you've come back. Just more of highlighting, that kind of tells you a little bit about what's been going on in Chattanooga for the last 50 years, too. And that kind of gets to what we're talking about today. Other side note, Mr. Hakim has been a councilman for 19 years. And I think a lot of people aren't very familiar with what a councilman does, what a councilman is, especially if you're not from this area or maybe just aren't aware of kind of how political structures work. So just briefly, what is a councilman? What did you do over those 19 years?
We take your money and spend it the way we want to spend it.
There we go. Okay. Amen. Amen.
No,
that's what Pastor Mike does, actually. nothing.
But the form of government that we have presently in the city of Chattanooga began in 1990. We had what was called a commission form of government where you had five commissioners, one over education, one over police and fire and things of that nature. In 1990, it was declared unconstitutional, and we went to a district form of government where you had nine council persons representing a smaller district than the whole city. And some of the things that the city councilmen participate in, the budgeting process, some people think we just sit there and look at the numbers, but we also look at how that budget impacts the neighborhoods or the communities that we come from. We have to study the budget very well because things sometimes get in there that you didn't know were in there, and it doesn't benefit the people. It benefits the haves as opposed to the have-nots.
So you're definitely an advocate for your area that you're assigned to.
Have to be. And that's something I think the people look for. You may not be able to get everything that the community wants, but they want someone to speak on their behalf. And I think that's something we've tried to do over our period of time we were there. And you'll find that that the time that I've been on the council, you learn things. You know, there were how you were may have been misused early on, politically speaking, and how you can avoid that happening because you have that institutional knowledge. But council people also have to deal with constituent services, and I think that's a very big part of being a council person. We talk about potholes, we talk about flooding, other things of that nature. That's the key to being a council person. It's not sexy. It's not something that's, you know, you see and talk about all the time, but that family, that individual, they want to see their problem addressed. Mm-hmm. And I think as a result of that, people bond with you.
And I'm sure that's hard to try to meet the needs of everyone, and there's a lot of backlash that you get at times because you're not doing what they wanted to do. I'm sure that was a very tricky situation.
And it is, because this group over here wants X done, this group over here wants Y done, and when you don't do what that group wanted, then they remember that at election time.
Sure. In 2 to 3 minutes, just give us kind of a snapshot view of the last 50 years of Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. Just go through kind of year by year. And maybe in particular highlighting how things have changed over the years. Uh-huh. Maybe as perspective of a councilman, mm-hmm. as a leader in the area, but also as a black man growing up mm-hmm. throughout this time and kind of how Chattanooga, the ebb and flow.
Well, I think one of the seminal moments in the city of Chattanooga, I believe it was 1969, Walter Cronkite said, Chattanooga is the dirtiest city in the nation. And as a result of that, there became a movement to move Chattanooga from that status. And I think you see Chattanooga as a city today that is admired by many other cities throughout the nation. So it took a lot of creativity and ingenuity in the area of education. We went from a city school system to a city-county school system. And I fought that change because I didn't feel the county, they were not taking care of their own schools and appropriating adequately for education. So I felt the inner city schools would be left in the wake of all of that. And in my view, it proved to be but one thing that the city did at that time, and I didn't think it would ever be done, is that the citizens of the city voted for a tax increase. And they knew, you know, this was something that the mayor at that time and the city council, we worked to let people know that these funds will go to education specifically, and people believed in that.
So, side note for a second. Mm-hmm. There's probably a number of people in this room who went through the Adventist school system, so private school system. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about schools being funded by the city and councilmen's mm-hmm. playing a role and the inequity of how certain schools are treated or funded, mm-hmm. that may not resonate as strongly. Okay. How many of you went to Adventist schooling predominantly? If you'll just raise your hand for a moment here.
Okay,
so, and that doesn't mean, I mean, at different Adventist schools, there was mm-hmm. still an issue of funding, and some schools had things and some didn't. So there was still that concept, but it's much different, I think, for a lot of us, when you think of inequality in mm-hmm. the school system mm-hmm. and how that has looked over the years.
It is a problem even today. You have schools that are predominantly white, predominantly black, and the inequities are there, something we strive. I'm working with various leaders now to change the inequities within the system. Not equality, but inequity. What we're saying is there are needs, greater needs, we're saying, a number of inner city schools as opposed to those we're saying the suburbs. I'm jumping from item to
That's
item.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, my own upbringing here in the city of Chattanooga, I go back to, I guess, 10, 12 years old, the type of situation and environment I had with the police here in the city of Chattanooga. A couple of friends and I were going home from a movie, and all of a sudden this car comes busting out of the dark in the parking lot of a grocery store. And the officer says, "What the are you ends laughing at?" So, you know, we're just laughing. We're just on our way home. "Well, I don't want to hear X, Y, and Z out of you anymore." That was the kind of relationship that we had with the police here in the city of Chattanooga. And I think that's the kind of thing that grew dissatisfaction and resentment from young persons at that time, like myself. I think that was some of the things that moved me toward the Nation of Islam, because I knew what it was to have to step off the sidewalk, step off the curb to let someone else come by. Have people to talk down to you and things of that nature. And so I think that was a impetus for me to leave the Christian community. I did go on a spiritual journey, studied Hinduism,
mentioned Buddhism.
Buddhism. And I felt at that time that Islam was a way of life that was natural for me. And that's the direction I went. But over a period of years, I became dismayed at what I saw happening around the world. I did not see an accord with the Islamic community. I did not feel at ease in my heart. And so I went to some of my friends and said, "You know, why should I stay in the Islamic community?" And, you know, I didn't feel it. So as a result, I wound up coming back to the church, and it was like lifting a burden from me and gave me a peace of mind and heart to come back to the church.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You mentioned one thing there about the interaction with authority figures growing up, 60s, 70s. Is it different now? Has it improved drastically? I think a lot of people would say, "Oh, man, it's fine. You just do what you're told. Be respectful. Everything's fine." I see that sentiment expressed on social media. I hear it in conversations. You just do what you're told. Everything will be fine.
Well, I think you have to. The experience is different, particularly for young men of color. And I think even today, we have a police chief and a leadership within the police department that wants it to be, "We are here as servants for everyone." But the reality is there are officers, as much as we try to get people on the police department who can buy into every citizen has value and worth, we still have some who come through the process who gives a negative image of that. So I do feel that things have changed, but there's much more that needs to be done.
Sure. Another thing, over time, say the last 40, 50 years, who are some notable people we may not be aware of, maybe in our African-American community who made contributions in Chattanooga, outside of Samuel L. Jackson?
Okay.
And that's still a great one. I mean, it's still a good one. But maybe some people we're not as aware of. And maybe some events, people and events over these last 50 years that you would say, you should check these things out. These things were big.
Yeah. Well, Samuel L. Jackson, I did not go to high school with him. He was on one side of town. I was on the other. And I don't think any of us realized what a big dog he'd become going forward.
He's kind of big. Kind of a big deal.
Yeah. But I think one of the individuals that you may want to do some research on is John P. Franklin Sr. He was the first African-American to be elected to a political position of note. Prior to him being elected, I think that was 1971, it had been 60 years before a person of color had been in an elected position that, you know, meant something. He was the commissioner of education. And he was special to me. At one time, he was my teacher, he was my principal, he was my colleague on the Board of Education, and so he wound up being one of my mentors.
John P. Franklin Sr.
Yes, okay. Yes. And I guess you could say some of the similar moments, I guess not only in Chattanooga but around the world, was the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We had disruption here in the city of Chattanooga like you did in other areas around the nation. But what we have found historically in Chattanooga is that you will be allowed to release your frustrations and then everything go back to the way they've been all the time. Even today, there has not been a will to talk about race. Now, one of the things that we worked on at the city council was a disparity study. This is talking about the differences and what we can do to change the differences. In the African-American community, I think a lot of times we wanted to use it as a hammer to hit people over the head as to what you haven't done, why you haven't done, and all that. But some of the other people that I've run into is that we use this as a tool to make change. And I think if we look more at it as looking as a tool, we can move forward more together. Persons like yourself makes it easier to make some of these changes. But a lot of people, I think, have not, in a sense, come out of the shadows, Caucasians in particular in this city. What I mean by that, a lot of times it takes people who look like you to influence you enough to change that, help change that mindset of that we all have value and worth.
Wish we had. So, I mean, what you just said, we could talk about for a long time about the role of advocacy and especially the burden that should be placed on the people who have historically mm-hmm. been in positions of power.
Mm-hmm.
Man. One more thing. Let's talk about one more thing here as we're kind of wrapping up. That's just there's some homework, though. Like, what is the role of people who have been in power traditionally to advocate for those who have not been in power? Just kind of leave it at that. Mm. But what I mean is, what is the role of white people in advocating for non-white people when it comes to inequality? And the role should be extremely high. We should be at the forefront. Mm. Anyway, well, that's another time,
yeah.
Maybe. But
I think that's a matter of partnerships, working together. But I do think the major changes that will come from white people talking to white people. And, you know, sometimes this is just in your homes or just friends talking to each other to help make these changes.
Or Facebook. That's a great medium, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I think there's some people in the intelligence community would take issue with that.
Oh, okay.
But really, you are the difference makers when it comes to the changes that we feel this nation needs to be a part of. And, you know, again, you have to be leaders in the discussion, in what the solutions are, and how we go about doing it. This doesn't say that people of color need to sit on the sideline and watch.
Right.
We need to partner with you. You need to know
it
that.
It can't be this is somebody else's issue. Well, let them figure it out. Am I my brother's keeper? No, I'm over here. That's them.
Mm.
It has to be a collaborative.
And you know, if we go to the Bible, as you said, am I my brother's keeper? One of the scriptures that means a lot to me is Ephesians 2:8. For by grace are ye saved through faith, not of your own doing. It is a gift from God. That gift that we have, I think love is a very big part of that. And one way of expressing that love is to find ways of working together so that we all can enjoy the greatness of America, of our city, and move forward as a people.
Last question here, and maybe if there's some kind of applicable way that people can be intentionally involved in the process. Chattanooga probably has come a long way in many mm-hmm. ways over mm-hmm. 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people who would say, man, it's the greatest city in America. It's mm-hmm. voted the best small city and the best outdoor city and this and that. And those things can be true in many ways. If you look kind of behind the curtain, though, you'll still see that there's inequality in the mm-hmm. city, that there's a disparity there. And so there's many things we could talk about. But mm-hmm. as the city continues, as people in the city continue to make things more equitable, mm-hmm. what are some of those challenges mm-hmm. in trying to make this a place that truly respects and hears the voices of all? What are the challenges, and then what are maybe following up to that challenge, what individual people could do mm-hmm. to help address those challenges? Just all the challenges and solutions in 3 minutes.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay. Of course, in the area of education, employment, political involvement, these things are very key. When we talk about education, if we go back to the time of slavery, it was against the law a period of time where people of color could not learn how to read and write. Well, Jim Crow took place after that. So education is very important to changing the lives of a lot of people. In the area of employment, I have been raised to believe that I have to work twice as hard to get where another person is who is not a person of color. So I'm saying if you were talking about a level playing field, let's have a level playing field. In the area of politics, I think we have to realize that, I talked about earlier being in the Islamic community for a while. As a school board member, my first 15 years on the city council, I was a member of the Islamic community, and I believe the people saw my heart as opposed to that label. And the Christian community was one of the strongest communities who supported me. So I'm saying, let's get beyond the differences we have and find ways of working together in the interest of the whole.
Well said, well said. Well, thank you, sir, for this time together.